This is Sylvia Bucis and Eileen Lane on February 10th, 1982, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, a third tape interviewing Rabbi Leonard Winograd of McKeesport.
Testing my voice level. Try this. One thing that's very important that I thought of after we finished the last time, should have been on the very first tape, was on my feelings about religion in the public schools, having grown up in a public school where there was a lot of it. I felt that it was a very good thing in reinforcing my awareness of being a Jew. Constantly coming into public school and constantly confronting somebody else's religion, knowing that it wasn't my religion, made me more aware of the fact that I was Jewish. I think it's important that our children be exposed to authentic Christianity, not to a Christianity that is watered down so that it won't hurt their feelings. I think that that's fine for brotherhood. And that's fine for when you visit a church, and when their minister comes to preach in your temple, that you shouldn't go around slapping each other in the face. I think it's very good for our kids, though, to hear a priest or a minister speak to his own kids and talk about the virgin birth, and talk about immaculate conception, talk about the three wise men, talk about original sin, talk about these things. Because these are things that are so alien to Jewish children. They don't realize how Jewish they are until they see authentic Christianity. And I think it's good for them in terms of being happy with what they are, being able to live their own lives authentically. So, as God would have it, I came to the Hebrew Union College, and early on, I figured out, I remember the night that I had the Eureka experience of figuring out what I had to do with credit so that, by God, I could get out of this place a year early. And I checked it out with a couple faculty members, and they said, yes, I could. If I did this and this and this, and the numbers added up. And I did. Of course, it was contingent upon my having top grades all the way through. And I did. I had great grades. Only time in my life I was ever a top student. But I was certainly highly motivated. And then I remember the day of my ordination, how I wept.
Who ordained you?
Nelson Glick.
Oh my.
Nelson Glick, he gave me more than ordination. It was part of the program at HUC that twice while you were there, you conducted daily chapel services for a whole week, and twice you preached at Sabbath services. And once, when I was conducting the daily chapel service, he came up to me and put his arm around me and said, young man, someday I would like you to be my rabbi.
Oh my goodness.
And I wish he had lived long enough. He was all right with me. And it's something that I would carry with me forever. It was, I guess, the crowning moment.
What was your impression of other students in your class?
Good question. Before I went to HUC, you have to realize I was older. I went to see Rabbi Burton Levinson, who was at Temple Sinai, and Dr. Freehoff. Dr. Freehoff advised me to ignore the other students. He said, quote, ignore the other students, they will only disgust you. And that was because of the difference in ages. And I have never known him to be wrong about anything. Okay. And Burton Levinson gave me excellent advice. He said, I don't know if you will like being in the rabbinate, but you will never regret the years you spent in Cincinnati. It's a wonderful place to live. And I think that all the advice that I got from other rabbis was worthy of me and very helpful. There was a big difference in our ages. And
how old were you at this point?
Well, I was 31 years old.
31.
These fellows were coming out of college.
They're like 23.
Yeah, at the most. Mm-hmm. Coming out of college. There was one time a kind of student rebellion against a beautiful man who was a Talmud teacher. His class walked out, and I stayed. They walked out because he had kicked one of the students out of class who was sitting there with a comic book inside the Talmud. And they didn't know it. They walked out on him. But I had more faith in him, in the teacher, than that. And I remember who the ones were who stayed. I was one, Rabbi Jason Edelstein, who's in Monroeville, stayed. And there was one other, and I remember one of the fellows who walked out later said that if he had known that this fellow had a comic book there, he wouldn't have walked out. I mean, you don't walk out on teachers for a thing like that. So, and for men who are in their middle 20s to be bringing comic books to a professional school. Anyhow.
What was your impression of some of their motivation? And I was, in going to
I didn't know why they wanted to go there. I didn't know why they wanted to go there. I don't know why you're asking this question, but I don't know how much you know, but there's a certain bravado in boys at this age that they, on the one hand, they're driven in the direction of pretending that they don't believe in God and they don't believe in anything. And on the other hand, they are more orthodox than anyone else, and the teachers aren't firm enough for them. And you wonder, well, why are you here? And I was there after a serious choice, and those kind of problems I had long before resolved. They were not problems. My problem was to put food on the table for my family, go to work every day after I went to school, to maintain straight A. Those were my problems. And these little games, cocktail party playing with God concepts, those were toys for children. I'm sure that this is what Dr. Brehoff was talking about, and I'm sure they outgrew it. I understand it would be difficult at that age to be involved in anything that heavy. And if they had never done anything in their life but go to school and come right out of a fraternity house into a seminary, it would be hard. But ultimately I graduated and I cried and I took an oath that I would never work that hard again as long as I lived. But I've never been good at keeping resolutions.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound as if that's possible in the rabbinate.
I left there and I went to a new congregation in Massachusetts. And they had, I think, 85 members when I got there. And in 3 years, I brought 350 families into the congregation.
Where was this?
No, that's wrong. In Framingham.
Framingham.
No, I brought 535 new families in 3 years. And when I left, we had 300 families. They were just coming and going like fleas, all young people. And I just was never home. We had been there 3 years till we finally got an evening to ourselves. I was never home. And I had a loaded suitcase in my car that I used for going around knocking on doors of the houses, because in every house lived a Jew. And I would show them the books we used in our religious school. We had 400 kids in the school. We didn't have a building. We didn't have a pencil. And the whole thing was like a finance committee with a school attached. Had a big faculty, very well paid, very good school. And I ran it. And I was subject to the very same things that happen in all new congregations, but I didn't know it because I'd never been through it before. jockeying for a position between different factions, and each one wanting to use the rabbi one way or another, and not realizing it probably. And I had a ritual chairman that I had to answer to, who had never attended services until he joined that congregation, and had never been, had 1 hour or 1 minute of Jewish religious education at any level. But he was a very nice man who meant well and really screwed things up. Yeah, but he didn't know. And he sent him to Boston to buy a certain book. He came back with a different book because it was cheaper. And he bought a couple hundred copies of it, you know, that sort of thing. So I left rather than lose my mind or have a heart attack.
So you were there 2 years?
Three years. 3 years and 3 months or so. And I still have very close friends in that community after all this time. And I still go back for weddings and weddings and so on.
And you went from Framingham
to Johnstown. That was what happened was I had just agreed to stay there another 3 years, came home on vacation, and I went to Johnstown because a friend of mine living there had a very sick child, and I went to see the child before the surgery. When I got there, I was told that the president of the temple wanted to meet me because my wife's father had taught him the furniture business, and he wanted to meet me. And I thought, if he wants to, okay. And just like that, the next thing I knew, he was offering me the position. They needed a rabbi. He offered me the position. And it was a terrible thing for me because I knew where I was. It was a growing community. And I was working hard to build it up, but I knew it would be a big congregation. And Johnstown could never be big. But Johnstown was close to home, close to my mother, close to my wife's parents. And it came down to this. If I didn't make that move, I could never preach about family again. But there was the opportunity to bring the family together. And so I took it. I brought them to Johnstown. And
this was what year now?
Well, must have been 61. And I stayed there 8 years. Those were wonderful years. It's a wonderful place anyhow. And Johnstown's the town where I was president of all kinds of things. And I was on TV constantly and on the radio constantly. But there were two television stations in Johnstown you were always on. And in the paper, picture in the paper almost weekly at least, constantly speaking in those towns. But they had in Johnstown, as in post-disaster communities, fantastic youth facilities. And they had the largest privately owned teen canteen in the country, and I was the president the year that they had 8,400 members. At the same time I was president of that, I was the head of the Human Relations Committee, which was a very big year for them. I was also president of the Zionist region. So I had those three things going at that same time. So then people, if I use the idea that I was president of things, they started making me president of things I didn't even belong to. And I would explain, I'll take it, but I'm not going to do the work. The members have to do the work. And the members didn't do the work, and they lost their president.
What was the name of your congregation in Johnstown,
Beth
and how many
Zion
families?
Beth Zion Temple. I think possibly 110 families, but I'm not sure.
Was it relatively stable while you were there?
Oh, that was
population.
That's a very stable. Well, I think their population dropped something like 1,800 Jews to 1,200 Jews. This is human beings, people, in a 10-year period. Our temple lost only two families to the other congregations in town. And it doesn't sound true, but it is, that in the 13 years I've been in McKeesport, we have lost only one family. family to another congregation in the caseworker. It is so spectacular, people don't really believe me when I say it, but it is true. Now, if somebody quits and doesn't join another congregation, they didn't leave because they didn't like us. They were very left alone.
Now, I was looking in terms of population trends in the community, whether the Jews were leaving in Johnstown.
Very much a decreasing, declining community. When I was in Johnstown, there were three congregations. The second day of Rosh Hashanah, we did not have services in the Reformed Temple. So I used to go to the Orthodox synagogue with my cantor, with my family, and with a lot of my friends. And I would give a sermon, and my cantor would sing several parts of the service, and after service we would go to the home of a good friend and have a nice Yom Tov dinner together. Those were wonderful times. It's a wonderful community. They had wonderful facilities. Now there's only one congregation there.
They're down to one from three.
Yeah, but that one is a really strong congregation. And the conservative synagogue was much bigger in Johnstown. And I think what they have now is a conservative synagogue with a reform rabbi and reform prayer book.
Well, I guess that happens in small towns.
Meeting in the reform building. That's mostly because of the kind of prayer book that we came out with 7 years ago, which I think ultimately will be a very good force in uniting the American Jewish community because it is sufficiently traditional.
You're talking about Gates of Prayer?
Yes. That you don't have to be a Reformed Jew to be comfortable with it.
So you were in Johnstown for 8 years, and
right.
Then what happened that you moved?
Huh?
What happened that you moved?
Well, tell you the truth, there were several factors, one of which was we had a new baby and we were running out of kids. That wasn't the big problem.
You were running out of kids?
The town was running out of kids. They had four Jewish children born in a year, from all the congregations. In my study in McKeesport, there's a picture of a man without a face sitting at a table of a board of directors. And I call that picture that night at Finkelstein's. Dr. Finkelstein was the president of my congregation in Johnstown, a very wonderful man and a good friend. And one night we had a meeting at his house. And I was deeply offended by some things that were said. And I said to myself, if I had a job to go to tonight, I'd leave tonight. I wouldn't wait till tomorrow. But I sat there, and no one could tell what I was thinking, or they would have stopped. The conversation would have ended. There is a problem in, all right. The word Jew means two different things, as you know. It means someone born of a Jewish mother, and it also means a person who practices the Jewish religion. Those are not the same thing. The word Jew means a member of an ethnic group and a member of a religious group. Really different things. Always been that way. And there's always been a struggle between the religious leadership and the ethnic leadership to see who is going to be the leader of the Jewish people. Now, what happened when I was in Johnstown was, for a fact, there were two very strong leaders in town, and I was one of them. And it's not hard for a rabbi to leave. It had reached the point where very valuable programs were good for the community were being opposed because of this conflict. It was more than a personality conflict. This was the fact that the head of the Federation was a very strong man, and I was a very strong man. As long as he dealt with Luke rabbis, he got along fine. And I knew that he couldn't leave, and I could.
Do you have to get that
phone? Left. Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
so you felt it was an untenable situation?
Well, I could put up with, why should I?
Yeah.
I didn't have to, you know. rabbi can always move pretty fast. And someone else can't move as fast. So it was a pretty well-known thing that we didn't get along. And then there was an institutional problem also involved in the disagreement. I was the rabbi of the Beth Zion Temple. I had done all I could to make my congregation as traditional as I could within the limits of Reform Judaism. The man I'm speaking of was a member of our congregation. He wanted a merger of all the congregations, which I wanted too. But every time we did something that made our congregation look good in the newspaper, he resented it, because he wanted. Not to make the other congregations lose face with us. So, how do I say it? An example of what it was that night at Finkelstein's. I had arranged for the Jewish Chautauqua Society to establish professorships at several seminaries in the area. One was Catholic and one was Eastern Orthodox. I had arranged for the money to be donated to the Jewish Chautauqua Society so that they in turn could give the money to the college to hire me to be the rabbi. And the person I'm speaking of felt that I should give at least one of those to the conservative rabbi so he wouldn't feel left out. Which I did. And then he objected because I had kept the nicer one for myself. I said he can have both of them. But I also felt that something which was an opportunity for us to do very good work in the community had become politicized. And this is not the right way to do these things. And of course, it wasn't long after I left before these things died. But this is my experience in every town that I've been. The things which I did, which I thought had become part of the community, ended shortly after I left there. We used to have in Massachusetts a fantastic set of rules about bar mitzvah in order to make it possible. Well, see, we're dealing only with young people there. And make it possible for everyone to have a bar mitzvah, we had strict rules about how much you could spend, what you could serve, so that the important thing at the bar mitzvah would be the accomplishment of the child and not the food or the liquor. So you couldn't serve whiskey, you couldn't serve meat, fish or eggs or cheese. Okay? It was all spelled out. Keep it simple.
That was a congregational decision.
That's what I thought, yeah. But apparently it was my decision, because the first bar mitzvah after I left, they already had hot Swedish meatballs. So, sweet and sour. And I had established in Massachusetts, something I heard from elsewhere, of how you celebrate Sukkot with young people. You go out into a park and you put up a great big sukkah, and you have everybody bring blankets, and hot chocolate and coffee are served by the brotherhood. People bring a picnic, and they sit around, they eat their picnic, and then you do a service for Sukkot under the stars. It's a starlight service. That was great. People loved it, and they really came out for it. But that ended when I left Massachusetts. We had it in Johnstown. It ended when I left Johnstown. I really felt bad when I heard that they weren't doing that anymore.
Did you institute it in McKeesport as well?
We had it in McKeesport, and we dropped it when we ran out of kids. We don't even have a school.
You don't have a religious school?
No, we bus our children to Hebrew Institute. They're getting a good education. Mm-hmm. But it's not a burden to us, because there's a very fine foundation in this town for religious education, and I write them a letter every once in a while when I need money. The man's name was Charles Peters, and he left money for religious education.
Was he a Jewish man?
No.
It's a fund in McKeesport for
yes.
you?
Yes, just for McKeesport. And Bill Walder is on the committee that decides how the money shall be spent. And they pay the bus fare for our children to Hebrew Institute on Sundays and pay their tuition.
Do they go once a week?
On Sundays. Mm-hmm. And then they come here for Hebrew school. We have classrooms in our house. And my wife and I teach in our house after school.
I see.
And we start the children on Hebrew when they're kindergarten age. By the time they get to bar and bat mitzvah, they're extremely comfortable with the language. They're very accomplished. And we're very proud of them. But they start in kindergarten, which you can do if everybody does it. And you can really teach more to the little ones than you can to the big ones. They approach it differently.
Can I just ask you, getting back to Johnstown, you talked about this conflict, but
yeah.
in general, aside from the perhaps the personalities involved, mm-hmm. how would this be a problem that is particularly relevant to a small town going through a declining population, looking to preserve something, or... What's your evaluation of the Johnstown Jewish community?
Well, the Johnstown Jewish community is, in many respects, a unique Jewish community. That's why I chose to write my dissertation about it. It's not an ordinary Jewish community. Statistically, if you were to read my my book, it has led in so many things in this country since the turn of the century, in planting of trees and in per capita giving to the UJA. I don't know, the first UAHC tour of Israel, I think, was 6 children, 4 of them were from Johnstown, or 2 were from Johnstown, really. The 4 was in the World War I, the Jewish Legion. 4 of those boys came from Johnstown, which isn't that big a town. It was always different. You know, mountain towns are more conservative, and that is definitely a mountain town. And it was never a satellite of any other town. So that McKeesport is pretty much a satellite of Pittsburgh. People from McKeesport go into Pittsburgh for this and that. Johnstown, they don't. McKeesport's a little too far. McKeesport had a lot of, Johnstown had a lot of little towns around. It had a lot of little synagogues around it at one time. It was a center.
What are the surrounding communities that had Jewish...
Like South Fork and Portage and Beaverdale. Those little towns, there were several towns called Jewtown.
Jewtown? Near Johnstown?
Yes.
Why were they called that?
Usually there would be a town that was a mining town. And you couldn't live in that town unless you worked for the mine. So a couple of Jews would set themselves up in business right on the border, across the line. And they didn't live in Belsano. They lived in Jewtown.
And there were several of those in the area?
Yes. And they called it Jewtown.
Are they... They're not existing anymore, are they?
They don't call them Jewtown anymore. But there's a Polkovitz family in Pittsburgh who grew up in Jewtown.
Is that Dr.
Yes.
Joe Polkovitz?
Yes. And They hired their own rabbi to come out and teach those two families in Jewtown, live there, brought in a man from New York to live there and teach. I don't know, Eileen, if Johnstown is a good town to compare with other towns in these terms, in terms of this kind of conflict, but I will say that in any community, regardless of size, where you have two strong personalities, even if they are both strong religious personalities, you're going to have trouble. And I'm a strong person. I know that. I didn't realize that this sort of thing was still going on when I was a student, and I would read about the conflicts that had been going on for thousands of years. But it is. And it's also true that there are real differences between those to whom Judaism is a religion and those to whom Yiddishkeit is a group of folkways. It's not the same thing.
Well, you mentioned that you did a dissertation on Johnstown. Was this for...
Do you have to hear the title?
Well, for
great
what?
Title. For my doctorate.
For your doctorate, okay, which you were doing at
Hebrew
Union College.
Yes.
While you were here in McKeesport or
Johnstown.
While you were in Johnstown?
Yes.
Yeah, let's hear the title.
The Horse Died at Windber.
You better explain that one.
Yeah, well, I think most people know that there are a lot of very prominent Jewish families in Johnstown, but the largest of the prominent families is the Glosser family. The first Glosser who got into town was Emanuel Glosser.